we can't sit this one out. Kids need opportunities to make sense of what they're seeing on the news and in the safe environment and structured environment that a classroom provides.
That's Emma Humphreys, the Chief Education Officer of iCivics, one of the nation's leading nonprofit organizations focusing on civic education. And I'm your host, Brett Levy. On this episode of Education for Sustainable Democracy, I'll talk to Emma about iCivics online games and programs, their efforts to expand civic learning opportunities around the country, and more. Please stay tuned. And if you like this show, please subscribe, write a comment in the tab below, and tell a friend about this podcast. Here's my interview with Emma Humphreys. Hi, Emma. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Brad. How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
Excellent. Thank you so much.
So I'd like to start just by asking you to tell us about iCivics broadly and your programs.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So iCivics was founded by retired Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor in response to what she saw, which was a very correct observation, as a decline in the civic health of our constitutional republic, mostly because of a decline in civic education. To be sure, there's other reasons, but she was looking at the numbers of folks who could name all three branches of government, looking at the results of the NAEP, and realizing that we had a problem. She was also really noticing all the attacks on the independence of the judiciary. And that's really sort of what caught her attention. And so She determined that civic education was the sort of realm she wanted to try to influence. And so she founded iCivics to reimagine civic learning for the next generation of young Americans. Something she liked to say is that knowledge of our democracy is not passed down through the gene pool. It has to be taught anew to each generation. And that's the role of iCivics. So we're most known for our 16 role-playing games, which are these essentially simulations of democratic processes that young people wouldn't otherwise be able to participate in or practice at this point in their lives, if not ever. So things like running for president, running a constitutional law firm, being a Supreme Court justice, being a county manager, they get to assume all of these roles, even as seventh graders or 10th graders or 12th graders, and really practice the skills of democratic citizenship and put their knowledge into practice. Beyond those games, we have over 250 other resources, lesson plans, web quests, infographics, videos, all free, all online, mostly designed for the K-12 space, although we're certainly used in homeschooling, in law school, by just families for fun, especially right now. A lot of families like to get together and play Win the White House and try to beat each other and get the highest scores. So that's really what we do. We're used by over 50% of middle school social studies teachers in the country, about 30% of high school social studies teachers in the country, hitting about 7 million kids a year. And we see, as you can imagine, our biggest spikes in traffic during the lead up to a presidential election.
Yeah, that does make sense. You mentioned that you have 16 video games. I'm wondering why you focus on games.
Yeah, so this is a really neat question. You know, it's hard to imagine a Supreme Court justice setting out to create video games. And what happened was she sat down with James G., who's really considered sort of the father of educational gaming. And he said, This is the way to go. This is the experience that is going to be most meaningful for kids, most authentic, and really engage them. And there's all sorts of research on why games are such a wonderful instructional tool. One of my favorites is that so many kids do not have good experiences at school, and they have damaged school-based identities. And so when they play these role-playing games, they're allowed to assume a new role. They're allowed to fail or succeed in private. And if they do fail, get some feedback and try again. And so it's a much more safe and comfortable and native experience for kids to play. And then for civics, it's just such a perfect match, because the whole idea of civics is the role of the citizen, right? So government is the three branches. It's all that knowledge. It's federalism, representative government, checks and balances. But civics is really about the role of the individual citizen in our democratic republic. And so role-playing games are just the perfect medium to teach kids about that role. and to allow them to practice it at a younger age and not have to wait for full adulthood or, you know, being 37 and eligible mm-hmm. for the presidency, for example.
Yes, I can definitely see how role-playing games would be a great way for young people to learn about civics. It makes a lot of sense. And young people are playing games outside of school so much, as are adults. So it seems like we should be bringing that energy and enthusiasm for the competition and engagement and goal-oriented action that games provide to help them learn about democracy and public issues. So that sounds great. And thanks for your work in this area. I'm wondering if you could talk more about what you have available to help young people learn about elections.
Yeah, sure. So the easiest thing to do is to just go to www.icivics.org and hit play and choose a game and start playing a game. It's really that simple. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to log in, although we recommend it. You don't have to. You can start playing a game. But if you go to www.icivics.org, you'll also find at the top bar a beautiful blue banner that says Election Headquarters. And if you click on that, you'll go to a magnificent landing page that in one place curates all of our elections related resources. So there's a ticker, a countdown to Election Day at the top. And as you scroll down, you'll find our most popular elections related games like Win the White House and like Cast Your Vote. Keep scrolling, you'll see our web quests, our lesson plans, our infographics. And these are all, again, free, freely available to students, to teachers, to parents, to the general public. Sometimes folks will come to the site and think, oh, I'm not an educator. This isn't for me. And that's not true at all. If you have an internet connection at your disposal in a moment, you can always go to icivics.org and it's for you. And again, if nothing else, just hit play and start playing games. I would love to highlight one of our newest resources on there for engaging young people in elections. You know, it's not lost on me that we focus so much on voting, but the majority of our K-12 students can't vote. They're either not old enough mm-hmm. or otherwise eligible. And so it's sort of silly that we put all this emphasis on voting, which is a thing that only happens a few times a year and only takes so much time to do. Now, let's be clear, voting is hugely important, particularly in a representative form of government, but it's not the only way to be a citizen, and it's not the only way to engage in an election. And so for that reason, we created a Student Power Elections resource, which really focuses on other ways that young people can be engaged during the election season.
Do you have links and resources on the site that enable them to find out how they can do those things, like working for a campaign or becoming a poll worker?
Yeah. So through that Student Power Elections resource, which is, again, freely available to anyone, but of course targeted towards students, there's readings to give some background context. There's websites we point you to so that information's there. It's sort of one-stop shopping for getting involved if you'd like.
So how do you manage to do all of this for free? Because certainly this costs money to create this website and these resources.
Yeah, thanks for asking. We are a nonprofit. We raise every dollar every year, and we've been very fortunate to be funded by private foundations, individuals, the government, federal government. We have grants from the Library of Congress, from the National Endowment for the Humanities. So we spend a lot of time and energy, as you can imagine, fundraising and showing, you know, proving that this is worth folks' investment. And making the case at sort of all levels of government and all levels of society that we need to be investing more in civic education. But yeah, we raise every dollar every year, and it's all hands on deck to make that happen.
You mentioned that Sandra Day O'Connor was your founder, and now I believe Sonia Sotomayor is on your board. She's not allowed to do fundraising, as the tradition goes, but she's helping to influence what you're doing. So could you talk a bit about that?
She's helped us to evolve and expand so that when we say that we're trying to hit all kids in America, we really mean that. And we're referring to English language learners. We're referring to kids of color. We want to make sure every kid can see themselves in our resources, see themselves in our nation's history, care about this, and be able to use iCivics materials.
One thing that I think about when you talk about games and role play is some of my research on Model United Nations and the legislative semester, in which students are working together to get things done. They negotiate with their peers to get either resolutions or legislation passed. They might have success. Their voices are heard. But sometimes when I interview them, they know that this is a simulated environment, a figured world, a place where, you know, there are certain constraints on behavior. And then they turn on the news and they see that sometimes the exchanges are not as collegial as they are in their classroom. So how do you help students make the jump from this simulated environment that's highly structured to the authentic, political, messier democratic society?
Oh, that's such a great point, because I think about when I was a high school teacher and I brought my kids to the YMCA's youth and government program, or we did the Center for Civic Education's simulated congressional hearings. You know, we demanded a level of civility and decorum that we don't demand of our actual elected officials. And so it'd be very easy for kids to call shenanigans on this and say, wait a minute, this isn't how it really works. And that's actually something we think a lot about at iCivics, is how to present a more authentic version of American civic life and politics. You know, for the first 10 years, I think we were really hyper-focused on meeting the standards and showing the kids how it's supposed to work. And in our next 10 years, I think you're gonna see a bit of an evolution where we start acknowledging the ways in which these things actually work and how they play out. I mean, I can tell you, if I were in the classroom right now, I mean, you can't lie to kids. I don't even lie to my 8-year-old. I tell her exactly what she's looking at and saying, yeah, this is a mess, and the adults are behaving badly. And to, you know, point that out, be honest with your students and say, yeah, here's how it's supposed to work. Here's what the Constitution says. Here's what we can learn from history. Now let's critically evaluate what we're seeing now and how it plays out. To give you one example, we actually haven't published it yet. We just designed it. We just got it back from the graphic designer. It's a new infographic on gerrymandering. And had we created this infographic a year ago, we probably really would have stuck to the sort of dry conceptual facts of what gerrymandering is, why parties engage in it, what strategies they use, and to what effect. But we started designing this after George Floyd's murder and after increased calls for more equitable versions of, well, everything in social life, but including public education and civic education. And we thought, you know, let's come at this a little differently. Let's still do all those things we would have done a year ago, but let's add just a little bit more real context to it and be really honest about the impact that gerrymandering typically has mm-hmm. on the representation of communities of color, which, spoiler alert, it's a bad impact. And it tends to, not exclusively, but it tends to result in underrepresentation of communities of color. So this is something we're explicitly acknowledging in this infographic that a year ago, I don't think we would have done.
So that's great. yeah, because it seems like there's a balance between helping young people acknowledge the amazing opportunities of government and being in a democratic republic, and also addressing the realities and the inequities and the things that are not fair about it. And you don't want to discourage people before they start to feel empowered, but you also don't want young people to feel like they've been fed misinformation when they actually engage in the process and realize that it's compromised, especially with regard to gerrymandering and the types of civil discourse or lack of civil discourse that are so common these days.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
So it's great that you're trying to address those challenges, and it seems like a long-term thing to look at. But when you think about the broad goals of iCivics, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges you're facing right now?
The biggest challenge is that civics is not prioritized as a discipline across the country, and it's not mandated in enough states. The exposure that kids have to civics classes is just way too small right now. So in addition to being an organization that is the top civics education curriculum provider, we're also an organization that works really hard to promote more and better civic education across the country. We have a sort of other side of our organization called CivX Now, C-I-V-X Now. And this is all about our work to advance the field and to help influence mostly state level policy so that students have more opportunities to learn civics. You know, the biggest hindrance we have to growth as an organization is that not enough kids are learning about civics enough. Some states have a middle school mandate. That's great. So the kids are taught in one grade. For instance, in Florida, they get a year in seventh grade. In Massachusetts, they get a year in eighth grade. That's wonderful. But in a lot of other states, again, they get one semester in 12th grade, and it's mostly devoted to government, not so much civics. So we're working to change that. You know, the goal isn't just to grow iCivics. The goal is to ensure that every kid has access to a high quality civic education for the purpose of maintaining our democratic republic. And the only way to do that is to ensure that kids are given opportunities to learn. And so that's what we work the most on. Right now, you know, given all the challenges to remote learning, the current situation, it's just a matter of making our resources as tight and as accessible and as convenient as possible. So whether a teacher is in the classroom virtually or some combination, it's easy to pull up and assign or use our resources as activities with kids. Just trying to make that a little bit more seamless.
So if teachers want to work with any of these resources, they can go to iCivics.org. And is there any professional development that you provide to help guide teachers through some of these materials?
Yeah, so we just put a new tab on our Teach Hub. So if you're a teacher, you should go to www.icivics.org, register for your free teacher account. That will give you full access to absolutely everything on our site. Once you do that, you click on Teach and you're in our Teach Hub, and you'll find that one of the tiles on that page is for professional learning. We have three suites of on-demand videos for teachers to watch. One is on teaching with primary sources, one is on teaching controversial issues, and the third one is part of a larger, much larger online teaching online masterclass, which is all about tips for teaching online, not about technology. It's all about pedagogy, online pedagogy. We also have a number of webinars, especially during election season. If you go to that elections headquarters, it's www.icivics.org/election. Scroll down, you'll see all of our webinars on deck. I'm presenting at least two times a week between now and the election, and other members of our team are as well. So there's live opportunities, there's asynchronous on-demand opportunities, whatever teachers need. And we hope to only grow those online on-demand opportunities as we go.
That's really cool, Emma. It sounds like you all have adjusted so much to the needs of the pandemic and remote learning. So I'm sure that'll be super useful to teachers. I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about your background and what led you to work at iCivics.
Yeah, so I'm going to go way back, but I promise you I'll move quickly. I was, I graduated high school, went into college as a political science major, minoring in education. I knew I wanted a career that would allow me to tap into both of those passions. And so it turned out that being a social studies educator was the perfect mix of those two academic passions of mine. And so I started my career as an 11th and 12th grade American history and American government teacher in North Central Florida. Loved every second of it. But I went after teaching, I went back and got my PhD in curriculum and instruction with a focus on civics and civic education, doing my research on the civics teachers in Florida when Florida first passed their middle school civics mandate requiring a year-long civics course. And so that was sort of my research focus. Right out of my PhD program, I found myself working for a public service center at the University of Florida. Working with undergrads, and that was an incredible experience, designing a lot of online, innovative civic learning experiences for undergrads, and then got scooped up by iCivics in 2016. And this is truly my life's work. There's nothing I'm more passionate about than civics and helping young people, and particularly helping young people grow and develop their civic identity.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think developing one's civic identity is central for fostering young people's participation and adults' participation too. I mean, who are we individually within this broader context? And civic identity is a big part of that. So when it comes to CivX now, that's your advocacy project.
That's right.
There are different needs in different states, right? Some states have a civics requirement, maybe a civics test that might or might not need some improvement. So how do you think about balancing the need to improve the quality in a particular place that might already have adequate standards versus just getting something on the books in a different place? Or are you more thinking like strategically, like where can we actually succeed?
So that's absolutely true. Everything you just said, though, is true to some degree. So yeah, we are going to focus on the place where we have the most opportunities for success. We absolutely care about Florida and Massachusetts. They have what we want every state to have, but we know that it could go away tomorrow. So it's about ultimately, I like to joke and say, we're not carpetbaggers. We don't go into a state and say, here's what you should do. Instead, we identify other leaders in the state. And oftentimes there's people already doing this work and committed in some way. And so we're able to just sort of come in, provide a policy menu, provide research, provide resources and an infrastructure just to advance the cause that they're already working for. But, you know, we have 50 states. We are a state and local control country, particularly when it comes to education. So we're not going to tell any state what they should do for their state, but we are going to provide resources and shared language and shared research just to facilitate that as much as possible.
Well, thank you so much. It's really fantastic to talk to you. I appreciate all the work that you're doing. It's super important. Do you have any parting words for our listeners?
It's an election year. It's a nationwide teachable moment. I know it's really tough right now to be a social studies teacher. It takes a lot of courage to teach our topic. And an election now is a controversial issue when perhaps 20 years ago it wasn't. So I just want teachers to know that they should be teaching about the election. If they need support to call me, I will provide it. And if they need me to call their administrator or their principal and say, you need to support your teacher teaching about the election, I'm happy to do so. But we can't sit this one out. Kids need opportunities to make sense of what they're seeing on the news and in the safe environment and structured environment that a classroom provides. So my message to everyone, mostly teachers, but also to the parents and the administrators and everyone else is, support your social studies teachers. In addition to everything else, they have to worry about getting in trouble for teaching their content, and that's just not fair. So support them, encourage them. If you're a parent, ask your kid's social studies teacher, are you teaching about the election? If they say no, ask why. If the why is, I'm afraid I'm going to get in trouble, then call the principal and say, hey, you need to support this teacher.
That was Emma Humphreys, the Chief Education Officer of iCivics. Emma also serves as the Deputy Director of the organization's CivX Now initiative, which aims to expand civic education around the country. You can learn more at iCivics.org and CivXNow.org. And this is Education for Sustainable Democracy. I'm Brett Levy. To learn more about the show, please visit ESDpodcast.org. That's ESDpodcast.org. If you like the show, please tell a friend about it. Thank you for listening.